and I are going to record, so y'all go ahead and shut the door.
A dinosaur?
Welcome to our Vintage Archives collection. For a special treat, we are releasing the inspirational testimony of missionary and former prisoner of war, Darlene Rose, in 5 nice little bite-sized pieces. Here is this week's offering.
Some of them never returned, but those that did return never talked about what happened to them. And then I remember the day when that big black limousine, we called it the death wagon, it came up and it stopped in front of the headquarters. And they called for Miss Kemp and Miss Seeley, the only two other Americans in that camp. There was an American woman who came from another island. But we were the ones, the only two, three that were Americans that spoke the Indonesian language and were known by the people there. And that day when they took Miss Kemp and Miss Seeley away, we all turned around and looked at one another, and we asked, why were they taking them? And we waited, and we prayed, and they did not return. 1 week went by, 2 weeks went by. And then one day the whisper went through the whole camp, as it always did, Kempetai, Kempetai. The secret police are coming. And that day, as I ran out front so I could see Miss Kemp and Miss Seeley were getting out of the car. And when I saw that there were soldiers and officers getting out of that car and running up into the headquarters office, I knew in my heart they had come for me. And so I started over toward the office because I did not want to keep them waiting. And just then, Sweet 17 came down out of the office. And he said, yes, they're coming for you. Come quickly. When I walked up into the office, they were walking around me and laughing. There was only one word that I understood, and that was America. Languages have come easily to me. I spoke 7 languages. And I did not understand what they were saying. I had certain commands I had to give in Japanese. And I just closed my ears to it because it was better for you not to know the language. And when those men walked around laughing, America, one of them stopped and he put down something in front of me. And I looked down at that piece of paper and I saw my name written on it, Darlene Dibler. He said, you are Darlene Dibler. I said, yes, sir, I am Darlene Dibler, but I didn't write that. He said, I didn't ask if you wrote it. But he said, what do you know about Morse code? And he began to tap out messages on that desk to me. I didn't know Morse code. I didn't know what he was tapping out. So I didn't respond. I said, sir, I do not know Morse code. He said, go over and get another dress. Come back. He said, we're going to take you somewhere else to intern you. I ran over and I grabbed a dress which had a full circular skirt. Why I had put that dress on that day, I don't know. But I had another one. And so I grabbed that and I grabbed my Bible off of the top rack where I'd been sleeping. And then I ran back so that I could get into the car. They ushered me in with 2 soldiers, one on either side. They had their bayonets fixed on the gun. And the 2 officers were up front with the chauffeur. When we came down to the city of Makassar, I recognized the building into which they were going to go into the driveway. And I saw that they had made a jail out of it. And there, just in front of me, as we pulled up, I saw Miss Kemp, a woman who had weighed about 170 pounds, and in just 2 weeks, that woman looked like she was skin and bone. She was hanging onto the bars and shaking her head at me, and I saw her arms were all black and blue. And when I stepped out of that car, I just cried out to the Lord, Lord, you took Russell. Must I now go through this? And so sweetly my Lord answered me. He said, my child, whom I love, They are the ones that I chase and I discipline. I said, all right, Lord, but please help me to be a good soldier. And those were the last words that Dr. Jaffrey ever said to me when he was being taken away from our camp. I ran up to the back of the truck, and he was being taken to the men's camp, and I looked up at him, and I said, goodbye, Dr. Jaffrey. And he leaned down, and he put his hand over mine and patted it. He said, Lassie, whatever you do, be a good soldier for Jesus Christ. And I said, Lord, I don't know what's going to happen to me here, but please make me to be a good soldier. I said, if ever I come out of this place, and if any of my fellow Americans ever hear about what happened to me here, I don't want them to be ashamed of me. The first thing they grabbed away was my Bible. They said, you don't need that, and you are not going to have it. You just sit in that cell, and you would read that book and not think about your evil deeds against the Imperial Japanese Army. They grabbed the other dress, and I handed it then as they were trying to grab it. And I said to the girl there behind the desk, I said, would you see that Miss Kemp gets this? Because she hadn't even had time to get a dress or anything except for the work suit that she was wearing. And as I walked out through that cell block, there was a man behind me with his bayonet on the gun. And when you feel the prick of that bayonet, you move. And I was moving to try to keep ahead of him. Went across a courtyard. And then there was another big cell block there. And I saw the guard point this way. And I turned and I went along that cell block. He came to a cell that had been completely boarded up, the window, so that no one could see who was in that one. And then he stopped at that one. And I looked up and I read on the door, Orang ini musti mati, this person must die. And I knew I was in death row. I could hear Miss Seeley. And I knew that within 2 weeks, that woman was a raving maniac. And when he opened the door and shoved me in, I hit the other wall and I turned around and I came back. And I dropped on my knees in front of the door because I wanted to watch that key. I knew when it made a complete revolution, I was locked in death row. So I sat there and I saw that man pull the key out, start to walk away. I suddenly realized I was sitting on the floor and I was singing. Do you know what I was singing? A song I learned as a little girl in Sunday school. Fear not, little flock, whatever your lot. He enters all rooms, the doors being shut. He never forsakes, he never is gone. So count on his presence from darkness till dawn. And I knew that they could not lock my Lord out of that cell, even when they locked me in. I don't know if you'll understand it, but that little cell became a sanctuary to me because my God was there with me. That afternoon, they threw a plate of rice across the floor to me. It was in a tin plate with no spoon, nothing to eat it with, but I'd learned well from the Indonesians. I knew how to get a bit of rice and roll it into a ball, stick it down there, and with your thumb, you go like that right into your mouth. But I couldn't eat. When he picked it up, he said, so, you don't like sugar? And there was a little bit of sugar in the top of it. He said, you'll never get it again. And no, I didn't. And they left me there in that cell about 48 hours without allowing me to go out and relieve myself. I prayed and I suffered. I knew that if I did anything on the floor of that cell, that I might be like some of the others, have to eat it up off the floor. It wasn't until the next day in the late afternoon they finally took me out to where there was a toilet. And I looked at the door, it was shut, but I could see fecal matter oozing out from under that door. And when I reached to open the door, it just gushed out. And I said, Lord, I have all these ulcers on my leg, and if I step into that, it'll be almost to my knees. And I saw a young man run up to the officer who was watching me to see what I would do. And the young man said, I will get water for you, sir. I will wash that down for you. And he just nodded to him in that way. And so he ran. I can't tell you how many buckets of water that young man carried. And I know that he knew who I was. Till he finally had it cleaned out. And then I was taken back. And they realized that I had dysentery. I had had dysentery. I knew that. But somebody had to pick up the extra work. And those of us who were still on our feet, we tried to do the other things that our sick people could not do. When they found out that I had dysentery, they didn't bring me any rice, the dry rice. I saw the first day when he tossed that across the floor to me, and the only opening or light came through the little transom above the door. And I reached down, and I thought in the dim light in the cell, that beautiful white stuff on the top. Oh, and I clapped my hands. And I said, Lord, there's somebody out there that knows I just love grated coconut. But then when I picked it up and the light from the transom fell on it, I realized it wasn't coconut. It was full of worms. I started to push the worms up onto the side of the plate. But because there was nothing but an open tin that they had brought into my cell, and I had dysentery, and hundreds of these big blue bottle flies were in the cell with me all the time. And they left the bucket there, and they came, and they were sitting on my rice. And they were eating those worms, and I was trying to get rid of them. And I kept going like that, but you can't handle rice porridge. And it was just rice that had not been washed. It was dirty. There was no salt in it, because I also had beriberi, which is a form of dropsy. And my legs were swelling. And they knew that I had the dysentery, so that's why they put me on rice porridge. And as I was pushing those worms up on there, I decided if those flies can eat that, so can I. And I never took another worm out of there. And I could bow my head and thank God that I had that bit of rice porridge and perhaps a bit of protein as well. And I would eat it and say, thank you, Lord. I could be here without anything. Yes, I went to the hearings. I asked the Lord to help me never to cry before them. No matter what they did, I never shed a tear before them. Oh, they knew how to use judo chops on you. I thought many times he was going to break my neck. And then with his finger, he would flick me right between my eyes. Didn't realize that was such a sensitive place. The doctor said there are many nerves there. And my eyes became black and blue. And I would answer their questions that I know I did not have a radio. No, sir, I did not go into the jungle. I have never reported to any of the allies anything about troop movements. I don't know anything about them. I don't know anything about your planes. I have never had contact with anybody from the native sector. No, sir, I did not have a radio. What did you do with the radio? I said, sir, I never had a radio. No matter what you said, they wouldn't believe you. The man that was just out of my line of vision would make the questions, and this fellow would turn them into the Indonesian language, and he would shoot them at me. And I'd say, sir, I am innocent. I did not spy on the Japanese. I have never been outside of that camp. I don't know anything about it, your soldiers. I don't know anything about where you have your encampments. It didn't make any difference what you said. Even though they tried to brainwash you and they beat you and other things, I never shed a tear. But I'll be honest with you tonight. When I got back to that cell, and the guard would lock the door, and I knew he was gone, he couldn't hear me, I wept literally buckets of tears. cry, and I said, please, Jesus, I can't go through another one. Please, Lord, no more, no more. I can't do it. And always he would say to me, but my child, my grace is sufficient for you. I didn't know why I had felt I had to memorize a poem by Annie Johnson Flint. Two of our missionaries had set it to music. When the Lord would say, listen, my child, my grace is sufficient for you, I would sit up in the cell, and I'd take that skirt of my dress, and I would wipe up all the tears lest the guard come back and find them. Then I would begin to sing, he giveth more grace when the burdens grow greater. He sendeth more strength when the labors increase. To added affliction, he addeth his mercy. To multiplied trials, his multiplied peace. When we have exhausted our store of endurance and our strength has failed ere the days have done, when we reach the end of our hoarded resources, our Father's full giving is only begun. His love has no limit. His grace has no measure. His power has no boundary known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he giveth and giveth and giveth again. And I could go through another one and another one. Till finally I knew I was to be executed. They told me that I was to be executed as an American spy. I had continually lost weight. I had malaria now. One day I needed some air, and I climbed up the bars of the window. I was glad that I'd had gymnastics and swimming. I had strong arms, and I pulled myself up the bars till I could reach the transom above the door. The minute I got up there and I was waiting for the air to strike my face, I looked down, and there was a knife on the ledge. I dropped to the floor, and I was shaking. I said, Lord, I think they planted that there. They're going to try to make out that I've had contact with somebody to have gotten that knife. I don't know where it came from, Lord. And then I got my dress and I went and I wiped off all my fingerprints everywhere that I could find. And I sat down on the floor, and oh, the fear that came over me, because I knew somebody had put that knife there. And I said, Lord, if they find it, they will say they have evidence against me that somebody was getting a knife to me. For 3 days, I prayed, and I prayed that God would remove that knife somehow. And I said, Lord, if you could make that axe head to swim, if you could lift that iron up out of that water until it surfaced to the top, I said, Lord, it's nothing for you to remove that knife, Lord, before they find it. 3 days I waited and I prayed and I said, Lord, you can take it away. And I went up, I pulled myself up the bars of the window, and I had not left my room in all those days. And I looked there, the knife was gone. Do you believe he is who he said he was? I do. I had become very, very ill. When I came out of that cell, I weighed 60 pounds. This one day, I was having a fever again, the malaria, and I would shake with the chills, and then the terrible fever would come over me, and it was cerebral malaria that usually is fatal. And this day I said, Lord, I really need some air. So I pulled myself up until I got hold of the bars of the window, And then I looked out and I saw that the guard was coming. He was bringing the native women who were there for just minor misdemeanors. And there was Miss Kemp also. She looked so terrible. And I was watching them. And suddenly I realized that there was something about one woman that was with the group. Every time the guard with his gun on his arm went in that direction, this woman would scurry off in the other direction. And I watched her, and I looked down there, and I thought, there she goes, and there he goes. Oh, he's coming back now. Here she's standing there as though she hadn't been doing anything. And he clicked his heels down here, and then he went off in that direction again. And I watched her, and there she was. She was headed for that fence at the end of the courtyard. And I thought, if she wants to go over by the fence, why didn't she just go over there by the fence? But no, this time he went back. And when she got to the fence, I saw a hand come through that fence. And on that hand was a whole bunch of bananas. And she put it in under her sarong, and she walked away. And nobody knew she had those bananas, but I did. I could smell bananas. I could remember the flavor of bananas. And I looked at those bananas when he passed them over. They had disappeared now, and I just dropped down off of that door, and I got on my knees, and I said, Lord, I'm not asking you like for a whole bunch like she has. I just want one banana, Lord. Then I began to figure out how God could get a banana into that cell to me. Don't tell me you haven't done it. Try to figure out how God could answer your prayer. And I said, Lord, now there are four possibilities. These are the two men, Lord, that have been trying me. Neither one of those men would ever bring me a banana. I know that. And this is that guard that's on duty in the daytime, and I know he wouldn't. He wouldn't bring me a banana. And I said, then there is this older Indonesian man that comes at night to guard. I think he might even bring me a banana, but Lord, please, you mustn't ask him. If he were caught bringing a banana to me, they'd just shoot him. So I said, Lord, please don't even let him think about bringing me a banana, will you? And I said, Lord, there's no way you could ever get a banana into this cell to me. And I said, please don't think that I'm not grateful. I really am grateful for the rice porridge. I just saw that banana and I thought I wanted one. The next day, I heard officers coming. Often when ships were in, you were put out on display before these men. And I said, Lord, I really need strength to stand on my feet so that when I get out there, I can make a proper bow to them. And I said, Lord, help me to bow low enough so that they won't hit me across the back with their canes, which they always carried. When that door of the cell opened, I looked, and in the door stood our Japanese camp commander from that other camp from which I had been brought down to the prison. And he was smiling. And the months had gone by, and this was the first time I'd ever seen a smile on anyone's face. I was so thrilled to see that man, to see that smile on his face, and I just clapped my hands and I said, oh, Tuan Yamaji, Seperti Liat Sobat Yang Lama, Mr. Yamaji, it's like seeing a friend. And I saw the big tears come in his eyes, and he turned and walked right back out of the cell without a word. And he began to talk to those two men who had been trying me. And I saw their heads getting lower and lower as he talked and talked. I don't really know what he said, but I've always felt that what he was telling them was what I had said to him the day when I heard that Russell had been gone for 3 months. The late afternoon, Mr. Yamaji called me over to his office, and he said, Nyonya, this is war. I said, yes, sir, I understand that. He said, what you heard this afternoon, many women in Japan have heard. I said, I understand that, sir. He said, you're very young, and someday the war really will be over. And you can go back to America and you can go dancing and go to the theaters and you can forget all about these awful days. You can marry again. And I said, sir, may I have permission to speak to you? You never spoke to them without first asking permission, or they just instinctively threw up their hand and smacked you across the mouth. I said, may I have permission to speak to you? And he motioned for me to sit down at a desk, at his desk. There was a chair there. And he went around and sat down behind it. I said, I would like to tell you about someone that perhaps you don't even know. And I didn't learn about him until I was 9 years old, back in Boone, Iowa, in America. And I said, his name is Jesus. He's the Son of God, the Creator, who created all things. I said, that's why I don't sorrow like people that have no hope. I know that someday I will see Russell again. And I said, Mr. Yamaji, I don't know. Maybe you have never heard about Jesus, so I would like to tell you about him. I said, that's why I don't hate you, Mr. Yamaji, because where the love of Jesus is, there's no room for hatred. And I said, my Lord gave his life for you too. And God gave me the most beautiful opportunity to lay a plan of salvation before that man. And as I talked to him, I saw the tears start down over his cheeks. And I said, he loves you, Mr. Yamaji. I said, maybe God brought me here just for you. I don't know. But if you were to believe, it would be worth everything that it's cost me. He got up. He couldn't control his tears anymore. And he went into his room. I could hear him crying and blowing his nose in there. I only know this, that from that moment on, that man was my friend.
We hope you are encouraged and inspired by this portion of the testimony of Darlene Rose. As always, don't forget to check out our great weekly specials.